chimney, chim, chimney, chim, chim, chiri. A sweep is as lucky can be. Chim, chimney, chim, chimney, chim, chim, chiru. Good luck, we're above when I shakes hands with you. Or blow me a kiss. And that's lucky too.
You're listening to I Want One.
It's you sound smart and thin and ready for action.
Okay, I'll take that. Okay.
Hi, everybody, and welcome to the Pre-Accident Podcast. I am your host, Todd Conklin. Yes, that's me. It's me. It's true. No, I'm not an imposter. It's me. It is truly me. Oh, goodness me. Ha, 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 ha. Here we go, pumpkins. We're on our way to another podcast. I like today's. Today, I'm thinking of today's as a good luck podcast. If you blow this podcast a kiss, you'll have good luck. We'll get into that more. How's everything going for you? Well, the weather kind of hit sort of, maybe, kind of. I don't know if it's going to hit or not. Who knows? It's hard to keep up with stuff. You know what I mean? It's just kind of one thing after another. The plate is full, and then more stuff comes on your plate. And now your plate's super full, and you know what happens? More stuff comes on your plate. I've just been crazy busy trying to keep ahead of everything and then doing these fun podcasts. And today's is hilarious. You're going to like today's a lot. So I'm going to tell you a little story. I had to fly to Portland to do a meeting for the state of Oregon's OSHA governor's conference. I think they call it GOSH. Oh, gosh. It's a conference. And a young man picked me up. Excellent. So much fun. We coordinated it. It was all going to be great. I've never met this person. He's never met me. So it's it's one of those kind of airport pickups. It's super fun. I get off the plane, and there's a man at the bottom of the escalator holding a sign that says Tater Tots. It was very clear to me that that was my ride. I don't know what other people were thinking as they got off the plane, but it was very, very clear that was my ride. And so I went down and said, "Hi, I am Tater Tot." And he said, "You are." And we took off from there. Other people tried to horn in. Tater Tot seems to be a very popular name to hold up as an airport sign. It worked perfectly for me. And then he handed me a small container of Tater Tots to sort of tide me over as we drove on the arduous journey from the airport to the hotel. And that was a super fun pickup. And we had a great time. And his name was Toby Brown. And that's who's on today's podcast. Want to know why he's on today's podcast? Because he's a chimney sweep. Here's my question to you. How many chimney sweeps have you talked to? Just in your life talked to? Okay, question two. How many chimney sweeps have you talked to about safety? Yes, I figured as much. And question three, how many chimney sweeps have you talked to who've had a significant fall from a roof while sweeping a chimney and lived to tell about it? In fact, it's kind of a seminal event for Toby. It's kind of where it all turns. And that's what this conversation's about. Listen carefully, because the chimney sweep business is not any different than any other business in the world. The only delineator is the top hat. You'll hear me talk about the top. I'm a little fixated on the top hat. So without further ado, let's get into Toby's podcast. This is a great conversation. You're going to learn a lot, actually. You're going to like it. So without any further crap on my part, here, my friend. Oh, and there's kind of a naughty part in this, so listen for it. Here, my friends, is Toby Brown, the chimney sweep.
So I live in a small island community in the Pacific Northwest, moved up here in 2001 and joined the volunteer fire department. And in 2004, I noticed a trend of chimney fires and started asking questions after Claire Abramson, who's a 90-year-old woman, lived on the island her entire life, woke up at 2 a.m. to find the floor around her chimney on fire. And the part that caught my attention was the chimney sweep had been there the day before. And so I started asking questions about how that could happen and found out chimney fires happen because of one of three causes. improper installation, improper usage, and a lack of maintenance. And so I did some more research and went to school, went to the Chimney Safety Institute of America, and learned to become a chimney sweep and earn millions of dollars cleaning chimneys in a small community. Well, millions of what would I call them? Accolades. People love to see me. I can't get out of the grocery store in under an hour. People always want to have questions or get on my schedule. It helps not to have any competition.
So really it's not millions of dollars. Really it's like millions of pennies.
If there was a million pennies, I'd probably be doing better. But yeah.
So my question is did you wear the top hat? That's all I care about.
Yes, and I have a top hat in my van because it belonged to my grandfather, who was not a chimney sweep, but he was born in 1903 and was of an era that you had a silk top hat. So I carry it with me. It doesn't fit, but I tell customers that it's an extra $100 if they want me to wear it.
Perfect.
They quickly drop the interest in the top hat. So as a chimney sweep, I kind of did my thing around the community and taking risks all day long. And one day in 2006, I was passing our UPS driver and he happened to have a chimney cap for me. And it was for a house that was on the way to where I was going. And I decided to swing by and they're not home. We have a lot of vacation rentals or a lot of vacation properties. So people with second and third homes own properties here. And so these people live in somewhere else. And I knew they wouldn't be home. So I had access to the house and swung by real quick to put a chimney cap on. It was a custom expensive cap. I didn't want it banging around in my van for too long. So I thought, it's on the way. We'll go. Real simple. And having read Malcolm Gladwell's book, Tipping Point, I now recognize 7 things that I overlooked. I thought about them briefly when I got to the house, little things like I brought my rope with me, which I don't normally use a rope. I should rephrase that. I didn't normally use a rope, but I brought my rope with me. I felt a little strange about the fact that you couldn't see the van. You can't see the house from the road. So no one knew I was there. And that must have put a little bit of a twinge in the back of my head because I brought my cell phone with me and I never bring my cell phone with me when I go to a customer's house. It's always in the van. And there were a couple others that I kind of just ignored. And when I got up on the roof, and I'd been on this roof probably about 6 times, really easy access. It's literally second story up onto a balcony, over the balcony railing, and you're on the roof. And it's a cedar shingle roof and it was just a little wet. In the Northwest here, we get rain, but it doesn't pour on us. It just kind of spits. And so it was just damp enough that it was a little bit of slipperiness. And so I'm up on the roof and I'm trying to get up to the chimney and notice that I don't quite have enough traction to get there. And so I flip the rope up around, try to get the rope around the chimney and did it the first time or the second time. But on the third time, it was just out of reach. And as I reached for it, I found myself sliding off the roof. And I've been to a number of vehicle accidents as a volunteer EMT and note that people that don't get injured at those accidents are usually the ones that are either self-medicated or unconscious. The people that are relaxed don't get hurt. And so I can't say that I consciously said, okay, relax, 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 as I'm looking at the edge of the roof coming up to me. And, but I also don't remember going over the edge or landing and wound up falling 30 feet onto a rock outcropping.
Wow.
And, miraculously I missed the wrought iron bird feeder that looked like something out of Mad Max. I did a quick little inventory and found that, I could breathe. My fingers moved. I could blink. There's a little thing that happens when you break your neck that there's a automatic reaction. You basically get a boner, and that didn't happen. So I was happy I didn't break my neck, and that was fun. And so I realized that all I had for an injury was my heel was bruised, and it was really sore. My leg was a little sore, but other than that, it was just a bruised heel. And I had to get back on the proverbial horse because the chimney cap was still on the roof. And it did not fall off the roof and land on me, which was another good one. But I had to sit there for a moment, and there wasn't any rush. I figured I could take my time now. And I sat there thinking about it. Do I go back on the roof for a $500 chimney cap? Or do I let it sit there and fall off and be destroyed and break something possibly? And so I decided I'd go back up on the roof and get that chimney cap because I didn't want to waste that $500. And so after that, I realized that there's got to be a better way. And there's got to be a better way to do it, to get onto a roof without taking such risks. And this house in particular, there was no easy way to get a rope on the chimney, on the roof. It's a very odd house that I looked at, and I've been to multiple times now, and still there's no way to get to the anchor points that the roofers put on. There's no way to get close to the anchor points without really being exposed. And so after a couple months of really frustrating trying to figure out how I'm going to get this chimney cap on there, I came up with a method for getting a rope over the roof without ever leaving the ground.
And you guys, as a rule, I mean, and correct me if I'm wrong, because I don't know much about this, but it strikes me that you guys, that chimney sweeps probably almost always work alone. I mean, you're probably always alone.
There are, I would say in the industry, the vast majority of sweeps are one and two guys on a truck. There's a small number of them that are larger, that have, you know, as many as, I mean, I would say that there's never more than two guys, maybe not never. It's very rare that you have more than three people on a job.
Is it fair to say mostly it's singles? It's mostly one sweep? Because it strikes me if two people go, that's twice the cost.
Two people go, but at the same time, you're cutting the time down. So the two guys, I used to work for a small company in South Carolina that it was always two guys to a truck, and we'd be in and out in, you know, less time than one person could do it. And it's a sweep and a helper. And the helper is the one basically running things back and forth. And the sweep is the one that basically takes the time and has contact with the customer.
So it's super high risk work. There's no question about that. It's also work that really requires a tremendous amount of expertise and skill. What were you thinking to move this industry forward? How are you thinking about moving this industry forward is a better question.
Well, I'd argue that it only takes a measure of bravery, or as I've learned, the difference between bravery and stupidity is bravery is knowing the consequences of your action and taking them anyway. Stupidity is going, hey guys, watch this, I'll do that. Problem with the industry is that it's full of hardworking, strong-minded, can-do mindset people that say, I can get this done. It's just getting up on the roof. There's a lot of guys that won't do metal roofs. There's a lot of guys that won't do cedar shingle roofs. But it all comes down to most of them are willing to get up on the roof no problem. The industry is really stubborn as far as wanting to change that any kind of regulation. They're pretty much against. As far as your question on influencing the industry, it has been a major uphill battle because they're looking at if they have to set a rope. And my system right now, I can set up a rope in 15 minutes. I can get a rope and anchor set up, so that the first minute my foot is – the instant my foot is off the ground and on the ladder, I'm tied onto the rope that's anchored to something of 5,000 pounds or greater. And I can do that in 15 to 20 minutes easily. And they look at that as one more thing that they have to do, and they'd prefer not to do it because they've been doing it for years without it.
So how are you changing that dialogue? Because I will tell you that you can look at that. You can look at that as something you have to do before you do work, as a permission granting, I don't know, some kind of formality, or you can look at it as a control and think, you know, if the worst happened, I'm covered.
So the big one is I would say that from the response that I've gotten, there's this very small group of people that says, wow, that's super easy. I'd like to learn how to do that. And I've worked with a few people few companies to make that happen. The majority of them see it as a control and they don't want it. They don't see that they need it. Their guys can get on the roof, no problem. What I was always curious to know is how they interview for a sweep and say, you know, you're going to come work with me, but you got to get up on the roof, and how you test for that. Cause it definitely would be one that I could see going through a lot of people. You got to get on the roof. No, I'm not interested. Nope. Sorry. Crawl space. I can do roof now.
It seems like there'd be a little bit of self-selection though. Like you wouldn't probably want to be a chimney sweep if you didn't want to get on roofs and wear a top hat.
And wear the top hat. Yeah. There are definitely a twisted mindset of people that come to chimney sweeping. But the amazing part is that the community as a whole is an amazing wealth of information, and they're very forthcoming with it. If there's ever a question that you have, there are a couple different chimney sweeping discussion groups that you'll get multiple answers to how to do something or a lot of information. There, in my first year, I had so many questions and I was getting so much help from people that I didn't really need to go to school. I would say that what I learned at school was kind of how to learn what I needed to learn, and then went out in the field. And in my second year, I looked back at what I did in the first year and went, wow, what was I thinking? I didn't know anything. I also am in a rare situation where I never had an opportunity to work for anybody in the chimney sweeping world. Most sweeps have this problem where they train their competition, and that they'll hire somebody, they work for them for the person works for them for a few years, and they go out on their own. And I see a lot of that in this industry. And I've got a couple different reasons why that happens, but I never had an opportunity to do that. So I kind of had to fake things until I understood what I was doing.
So what'd you learn? How'd you make it safer? What'd you develop? Talk to me about sort of that shift to the new view of sweeping.
So the new view of sweeping is that it's the little things that make the biggest difference. And there's no surprise in that. Little things like using a rope not to protect myself from the fall, but to gain access. That was the biggest mind shift for me, was that my rope isn't there to prevent me from falling. My rope is there to help me get there. It's the vehicle that gets me to the chimney. And in doing that, it also is my fall protection. So the one that I tell customers is that it's okay for me to fall on the roof, but not off. The other big one for me, even though it was a little tiny thing, was the idea, the concept of discipline. And the hard part is knowing that I can get on that flat roof really easily, but it's that 8-foot fall from the transition of from the flat roof to the ladder that I'm going to take. It's not going to be falling off the roof. It's going to be falling off the ladder. And that's what my rope is there to do, is to keep me from falling off the ladder. And it's the discipline of saying, oh, this will be easy. I don't need to go do that. I wrote an article called Fighting Your Inner Lazy Voice. And it's hearing that, oh, this is really easy. I can go do that. That's the inner lazy voice saying, no, don't do it the right way. Do it the quick way. Let's get this done. We'll go home quicker. We'll get paid for being fast. Let's just get it done, as opposed to let's do it properly. And that inner lazy voice is the one that gets people in trouble the most.
So how do you combat against that? Because that kind of operational discipline, everybody, big companies, small companies, chimney sweeps, non-chimney sweeps, everybody sort of puts up with that.
The hard part, I don't know how larger companies deal with it, because it's to my benefit to get injured in a larger company. I get injured and then I'm getting paid to lay on the couch. And in a small company, you know, I take a day off, I'm not getting paid. And so I, as the owner of my company, if I'm not working, there's no money being generated. So for me, that's my big primary one, is that anything I do is going to be affecting my bottom line.
Touche. That's a really good comment you just made, that your incentive is much different as a sole proprietor, as a little guy doing work out there. But I think you said something, Toby, that we shouldn't gloss over. And that is that you look at this the protection, in this case the rope, the fall protection, you look at it as a way to gain access to the work surface and a way to secure your ability to get off the work surface. But I think the comment you made that you don't fall off the roof, you fall off at the transition point, that's really interesting to me because that's probably the most complex part of the operation. It's the highest probability for failure to happen, and you're right between two stable systems. A ladder is stable and a roof is stable. It's the transition between the ladder and the roof that are kind of unstable. Am I right on that? I'm just making crap up here.
You are definitely right on that. And there are all sorts of gadgets. This conference we were just at in Oregon had all sorts of gadgets to make that transition safer. And I see it as Band-Aids, or it's like the seatbelt to make the car safer. They don't necessarily make the car safer, but they definitely add to the problem or add to the solution, depending upon which way you look at it. And sometimes I see that the things that we add to ladders, which are originally poorly designed to begin with, I want to be a sweep in the Netherlands where they're required to have a ladder permanently affixed so that the chimney sweep has access to the chimney. Chimney sweeps don't have ladders. They're already there. And the only thing that I'd be worried about in that situation is the condition the ladder's in. I don't have any control over that, where with my ladder I do. So statistically, looking through my background is in historic architecture and doing research on historic architecture. And so it was kind of natural for me to start looking at numbers from the Center for Disease Control, which ironically, they keep track of chimney sweep fatalities, which I didn't realize was a category until I started digging. And in the broader numbers, you can see that the transition period from roof to ladder is more dangerous getting off the roof than getting onto the roof. And from reading another book called Deep Survival, Who Lives, Who Dies, and Why, he explains that the problem with mountain climbing is that the accidents always happen on the way down, which is where you're unstable, your foot is planted, and then you pick your foot up and put it down. And that transition transition happens when an unstable environment, where when you're going up the hill, your foot you move your foot before you're unstable. Does that make any sense?
Yeah, and my guess is, at least my little correlative research, is that's also true with stairs. You hardly ever have injuries going – when people fall going upstairs, they tend to catch themselves really quickly, and it's kind of injury-free. It's falling downstairs that has the highest consequence.
Also, mechanically, your feet are designed to take that fall forward. Your feet bend that way better than they do backwards.
Right. Unless you have really weird feet.
That's true. And there are weird feet out there.
So what have you learned? I mean, so what'd you do with this? I'm really interested in how do you share this information with a community that doesn't really want to be shared with?
Not very well. I've learned that using the stick to beat the information into them doesn't work well. And I've been accused of being a safety Nazi. I've learned that giving away information is received better. And then I've learned giving away product is even more influential. The trouble is they tend to only use a product for a short time, either until it breaks or until they get lazy. And that's the hard one, is fighting that lazy. And I've not come up with a good way to remind people other than for the customers that I've worked with, at least as a consultant, I shoot them a quarterly email to say, hey, don't forget. And that's been helpful. I've gotten some good feedback from that, just to remind them about little things, little refreshers. But for the most part, I have done a poor job of influencing the community of chimney sweeps that there needs to be a better way.
Well, instead of going down the old name, blame, shame, and retrain trail there, I think the problem is probably not a lack of effort or skill on your part. The problem is probably the classic – cost versus benefit, time versus safety, thoroughness versus efficiency. It's hard for people to see that as a direct payoff. You only really need the protection from falling off a roof when you fall off a roof. If you never fall off, then the protection doesn't seem to be very valuable now, does it?
Correct. And that in the industry right now that is doing the most for at least my help or helping me the most is called Rope Access. These are the guys that do things like clean the space needle or inspect the top rail of the nuclear cooling tower. I mean, these guys.
Or offshore platforms. They're on offshore platforms all the time.
And it looks like a really fun job until you have to do it. But those, their standard, the rope access standard has actually worked out to be really helpful because it eliminates the whole fall protection aspect. And so if I'm requiring that rope to be set up in advance, then we can make that, you know, the OSHA people that I've talked to say, that's awesome. You don't need fall protection at that point. The hard part is that because the house and houses aren't designed for maintenance, they're designed for construction. And the fall protection standard is designed for new construction. So if I come to your house to, you know, clean the gutters, the last thing you want me to do is poke a hole in your roof to put my anchor in so that I have my fall protection. The other problem is I'm risking myself for a period of time to get that anchor in place. And so I've been advocating poorly, or I should say ineffectively, I've been advocating for an anchor in the foundation of the house. So that I just pop a rope over the ridge and I use the top of the house as the anchor point or as my high point. But the anchor itself is on the ground and in the foundation of your house. The one that I use most common in my area, because we were fortunate enough to have a lot of trees, is I use large trees, which according to Labor and Industries for here in Washington or OSHA, is not acceptable because they're not testable. But my vehicle is, and the vehicle is handy, but I can't always park next to your house. Some of the houses in my area, they're landscaped in such a way that you're not parking near the building. But that's what I've been wanting, is an anchor in the foundation that comes as part of the house. And so in order for me to move it, I got to move the whole house.
So do you go out and talk to other companies? Do you work with people and help them sort of think about this kind of preventative safety, this setting up systems that are tolerant of failure?
I have about half a dozen chimney sweeping companies that I've worked with.
How do they contact you? How if I wanted to get a hold of you, you got a website or something? How do people get a hold of you?
I currently have a website, thinksafebesafe.com.
So thinksafebesafe.com. Interesting.
Yep. And it is poorly designed. It's we're having a management issue at the moment, and mostly it's a timing issue.
You know, everyone thinks that about their website, right? I mean, they're always works in progress.
This is cool.
So if you gave us one piece of advice to sort of summarize what it is you've learned on this journey, what would your advice be?
You can always tell you're doing it the right way, because it's never faster, easier, or cheaper.
And if you blow him a kiss, that is lucky as well. So how's that, huh? That's the podcast for today. Pretty interesting. I like the part. I think it's really important to be reminded of the part that it's not the roof that kills you, and it's not the ladder that kills you. It's the transition from the roof to the ladder that the risk is at the highest. That's pretty good stuff. And I think I kind of forget that sometimes. That was the podcast. I thought that was really a fun one, actually. That's why we do this podcast, is to talk to people and from all walks of life, all walks of safety, all walks of reliability, who do the work we do. And I thought this one was really fun, actually, super fun. Thanks to everybody who helps out. Thank you for listening and subscribing. Tell your friends. That makes a huge difference as well. It really does. It makes a gigantic difference. And other than that, man, I guess we're good. I'll see you next week for sure. Lots of excitement coming up then. You'll like next week's a lot. I promise. There's a lot of good stuff on learning teams, and that's all happening as well. Until then, my friends, I hope you get what you need. That's really important to me. Have as much fun as you possibly can, and for goodness sakes, be safe.